Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in.
Another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. We got a stacked show for you guys today. We're going to do some catching up on this past weekend fights, ESPN from HBO and from Fox Sports 1. And then we're going to talk about this upcoming fight. I think a lot of us are looking forward to seeing Adner Morris and Johnny Gonzalez get back into the ring, and it's against each other. So with both of these guys, they really are not in any type of boring fight. So we're going to be in for a hell of a night between those two. We'll break it down a little bit later. Our two guests for Leaving the Ring tonight is going to be Efren Esquivez, who's going to be facing Rafael Marquez. And then a little before him, though, we're going to have the trainer of used to be Oscar De La Hoya, who was Oscar's old trainer when he started off in amateur and when he turned pro, Robert Alcazar. He's going to be calling in, and we're going to be talking a little bit about Canelo and Mayweather and among other things like De La Hoya and Trinidad. So let's start it off with this ESPN Friday Night Fights. Gabriel, would you break down the names, and then we'll go into what our thoughts were about those fights.
This was a great card, man. Chicago really brought it. You know, you had Arthur Shpilka versus Mike Mallo, the rematch, which was just, you know, everything that's been going right now, you know, it seems like, particularly in the summer, has been like the anti-skill bowl. You know, everybody is all enamored of, you know, pure boxing. If you don't like pure boxing, you don't like boxing. You know, it's all about hit and not get hit. This was like the opposite of that fight. Everything seemed to be, you know, going Spilka's way. Then he gets dropped. He gets up. He takes out Mallo and really just absolutely demolishes him with the left. It was just a fun fight. I don't know if it says Spilka is ready for the next level, but what it shows is depth of character and an ability to come back from adversity, get right back up and really go at it, as he showed in the first fight. Then we had Andres Fanfara versus Gabriel Campillo. That fight, you know, and Adrian Granados versus Mark Salser, kind of rounding it out. Fanfara versus Campillo looked good, but, like, I don't know about you, but from the first moments, his legs didn't look good to me. Even though he was boxing well, like, the upper body looked great, and he had some nice head movement and stuff, but the legs, they looked a little shaky to me, a little stiff, even though he still got good footwork, and none of that really leaves you, but there was just, the foundation was just waiting to fall, and eventually it absolutely crumbled.
It's crazy how from just a year ago, we were pretty much really hyped up about Campillo because he was a boxer, a guy that knew how to roll with punches. He was really a troublesome for a lot of folks. And he's kind of really fell off of that now. Now his legs, like you just mentioned right now, his legs, yeah, you're absolutely right. They didn't look well. We know that he had a good training camp, so there's no judgment of conditioning of the legs. It's just, you know what, when a fighter's time is up, when the date is the date of you being old, it's the way boxing is. It's the way it handles fighters nowadays. I mean, for centuries, it's the way boxing father time has handled fighters' position of staying where they're at. It's their way of telling them it's almost time for you to hang up the gloves. And I think it's really, Campillo's really got to sit back and his camp got to look at it. Either get some rest, really long rest, or head to Mexico because they do testing up there too. I heard that everything's fantastic and wonderful. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
Was that too much?
Was that too early? Because Campillo has really went Campillo down the hill so far in his career right now. But anyways, I got that from Gabriel. He said that a little earlier. He said he wanted to be nice. He didn't want the dark cloud to come out anymore. So I said I'll pick up the role for him for tonight.
This is actually pretty funny. Ryan Braun, actually, this just broke like 6 minutes ago. National League MVP of the 2011 season, Ryan Braun. Remember I talked about this last year when this all broke. and we were talking about drug testing, strangely enough, on the show. He's finally admitted that in a statement released today by the Brewers that he took a cream and a lozenge containing quote-unquote banned substances while rehabilitating an injury. He tested positive for elevated testosterone. It was, and then he had a 50-game suspension. It was overturned when an arbiter ruled that the urine sample was mishandled. He apologized to the collector of the urine sample, his teammates, and to Commissioner Bud Selig.
It's not going to go away, unfortunately. It's not going to go away. But
isn't that funny?
Yeah. Going back,
and it was also confirmed that a sample by carbon isotope ratio testing that it was in fact synthetic testosterone. just throwing that in there.
Throwing it in there so that everybody could see that we're not crazy. But going back with the ESPN card, Fight Fans, if you want to call in, you certainly can. You know, you always can. Download the Leaving a Ring app to your Android or Apple, or you can call in 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring. Garnados, exciting, loves to throw punches, but this kid is just a little bit too much of a daredevil for his own good, in my opinion.
Yeah, dude, he never met a punch he didn't want to get hit by. He needs to, I think it's a matter of simply stepping off to the side a little more. Going back to the jab, we'll get to Kovalev later, but I think who really exhibited a fantastic jab. But I think that Granados is a guy that he sticks around for the receipt a little bit too much, throws punches and then waits instead of just throw, and, you know, be so greedy, throw a couple and then move to the side, you know? I think that's what it's really all about for him.
Well, you know, the thing with him is here's something that I've noticed about the kid. He's one of those guys that makes sure he has to get a tan when he's a little bit too much in the heat. He likes to sit in the pocket. He likes to show that he's the stronger, quicker, and he's got some fluent combinations. But at the same time, when a guy decides to become – when he gets memorized with his own combinations and his own power and his own speed, they tend to just want to stay in there a little too long. And that's something he's going to have to learn, and he's learning the hard way. He got dropped really bad the first time. He was getting rocked throughout the whole fight, but his work ethic of what he was doing in the ring, it's really what bailed him out. It wasn't power. It wasn't really the way he was opposing himself, but it was really the workmanship, you know, and his stubborn kid. The kid is really stubborn. He wasn't going anywhere that night, so he did what he had to do. But here's the thing is that there's only so many times you're going to get your chin's going to get you out of a situation, or that amount of combination is going to get you out of a situation, because there's going to be a guy that's going to be able to take a punch and he's going to be able to adjust to what you're doing and puzzle you up a little bit. So that's something he needs to go back into the drawing board and really work on. I know it's exciting. It's fun for TV. It's fun for the fight fans. We loved it. I loved it. You loved it. We all loved it. But at the end of the day, he's got to look at his health and longevity in the career of boxing.
Yeah, that's really what it's all about. I mean, it's not a, you know, there's a delicate balance, I think, between being entertaining and being just straight up reckless. You know, it here he is, you know, a very young kid, and, you know, Salser, more power to him, but you know, he gave all he had, and I think, you know, his conditioning kind of betrayed him, and so I think that's why he had that plan, which was to kind of lay down the ropes, let the kid come to him, and then hopefully good things would happen. And that just wasn't the case. Good things didn't happen.
He had to have something different. I mean, it worked for – see, here's the thing. Was he was playing possum, but after the first time you catch him, maybe even the second time you caught him, he's got to figure that's not going to work all the time. He's got to work for – what he wants. A prime example was Saturday night, Kiko Martinez. And we'll talk a little bit about Kiko Martinez right after we're talking about the ESPN card. But he really had to do what Kiko Martinez was doing, which was creating the shots, creating the openings, putting the amount of pressure. If he would have done that, Salser, if he would have applied pressure after seeing him getting rocked and not, you know, when he got saved by the bell, or, you know, he got on his toes, that should have told him right there and then to get on his bicycle and start moving forward, start throwing the overhand right, because a lot of times a mover's not going to see the overhand right. What they're going to do, they're going to walk into the overhand right. But he didn't do that, and that really comes into the lack of experience and not being as active as you should be as a fighter.
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's a matter of time. I think that he, you know, this is a good fight. It's the kind of fight that you need to have. Is that, you know, not all gimmies are gimmies. You know, and you actually have to earn it. You have to actually be really smart, and it really take care of business in a business like manner. You know, you were owning the guy from pillar to post, really, by outboxing him. Just in and out, boom, 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 get out of the way. And then he just kind of lingered there where the guy wanted him to be. And it was a young machismo kind of thing where the kid's saying, like, doesn't matter if he wants me to come in. He doesn't have anything that's going to hurt me. And he walks right into a beautiful right hand from Salser. Just perfect, right off the jab, buzz, boom. Very simple, 1-2 down the pipe. And, you know, that was all she wrote almost. Sorry, I just got a text that threw me. I think that's what he's going to take from this fight is that to be a little more patient and let the fight develop a little more. You know, you don't just have to go get this guy because he's tired moving into the center of the ring. Well, you know, or moving to the ropes away from the center of the ring. You got to find a way to draw a guy like that out and eventually stop him.
Well, you know, here's the thing that we pointed out the things that he shouldn't that he was doing wrong. But Gennaro's was doing some stuff that was really well, and it paid off for the long run. And that was working, investing and working in that body. All fighters need to do that. He was polishing up Salser as best as he could, and it paid off. So kudos to him. Can't wait to see the kid get back into the ring. And speaking about Spica and Malo, you're absolutely right. Is Spica ready to go up against the top 20 or 10? I'm not really sure, but it was a fun fight. I'd rather see them go at it again, have a trilogy. I might end up the same way, but how ironic that they both almost mirrored each other, the first and second match. It made a lot of fun, and I applaud ESPN for playing the first fight to intrigue people, to grab people that either if they're a sports bar, if they're at home barbecuing, or they're just laying back and relaxing, they were able to see a good first fight. The second one lived up to the hype. The second one definitely kept you seated. Second one made sure that everybody was talking about it. So both those guys, they in my book, they were the heroes of Friday night.
Dude, it was just fun. It was just super fun. You know, two guys that are willing to, and they showed great sportsmanship in the way they treated each other, the way they went at everybody there. It was kind of special. You know, I think it was the, I'm going to be talking out my ass if I say exactly how many years it's been. But it had been quite some time since big time fights had come and been outdoors. I think it was like 50 years or something like that, they said, since Friday nights had been, or big time fights had been in Chicago, but been in, you know, it had happened outside. And to bring that back, there seemed to be a special atmosphere, and every fighter seemed to respond to that. This is my big moment. This is our city. It's a proud city, Chicago, with a proud fight tradition. And everybody displayed that. It was fun. It was one of the best Friday night fights I've seen in a very long time.
It was, you know what, not even that. I mean, they had the perfect matchmaking of fighters to be put on the card. It was in Chicago. Great night of fights, but at the same time, we got to see the ring and on a baseball field, and it took us back. And that was the one thing that I really liked and I enjoyed. And I was like, wow, man, I haven't seen that not in my lifetime. We've seen it in the old fights and traditions and stuff, but it was great to see it in Chicago. And Brian Fogg, I think he was out there. He was covering the event himself because he wrote an article. It was a really great article about it. So anybody that had the chance to experience going out to a Chicago fight and on a baseball field, man, I'm envying you at this moment right now.
The Forbes De La Hoya on like a soccer field outside. It's pretty cool. You know, it's not the same though as certainly not the same as the Home Depot Center. They're smaller arena. I still haven't seen something in a giant like, you know, outdoor stadium like Dodger Stadium or something like that, or Yankee Stadium, how they did the Foreman Cotto fight. I don't know. At some point, hopefully, I will. I'm definitely thinking about going to see Triple G versus Stevens that's just been announced November 2nd out there at the Garden. I think that's going to be fun while it lasts. I know boxing fans are so bizarre. They're so fickle. Like, oh my God, it's only going to be three rounds. And Stevens, you know, he hasn't proven himself. But you know what? He's knocking people out. He's got definite power. Certainly at 160, his power seems to be somewhat increased. why not see that fight? I don't understand fight fans. Like, oh my God, it's only going to be three rounds. Yeah, but what are three rounds that's going to be? And that's kind of what Friday, you know, Night Fights was all about, in terms of just pure action. Yeah, the kid has a lot to learn, and yeah, Campillo is kind of falling off the cliff, but you know, he had to be nudged there because he gave up a lot of resistance, and it was exactly what a guy like Fanfara needed. And Spilka, you know, who knows where he goes? Who knows where any of these guys go to the next level? But certainly fight fans are going to come out for them again. And
I don't even care where they go right now. I just want to savor the moment of what they did on Friday Night Fights. That's what
exactly.
I want to do.
Yeah, you know that's what was fun. You know, it brought everybody together there. They all saw great fights. Each fighter, you know, there was losers, but I mean, it was entertaining the whole night from bell to bell. So we need more of that. That's
absolutely. In about 15 minutes, we're going to be calling Robert Alcazar here on Leaving the Ring, and we're going to be talking some boxing with him. But let's move on to Saturday night on HBO, Gabriel.
Okay. You mean this Saturday or last Saturday?
Last Saturday.
Okay, and this was kind of interesting. I don't know if you saw the fight live or if you saw it on the tape delay, but Sergey Kovalev, Nathan Cleverley, dude, brutal fight.
Kovalev just, you know what, the way the middleweight division is starting to look really exciting, Kovalev just made the light heavyweight division really exciting as well.
Kovalev, you know, he's just been kind of a burgeoning storm. He's just slowly but surely rising. But he, you know, to people that, especially in this day and age, we were talking about online earlier with a friend of mine, the Iron Mike Gallegos from Deadspin, that what would people have picked with Jeff Lacy if you had a little more? I mean, you know, the hardcore fight collectors, and there were underground guys you could get DVDs from. But like Joe Calzaghe's career, if we had a chance to really watch it from the beginning, would people, as many people have picked against him in the Jeff Lacy fight as did? I think the answer is no. And Cleverley, to me, is that kind of guy that I've had a chance to watch because of modern technology grow throughout his career. A good friend of mine, Simon, out in England, pointed him out to me a number of years ago and said, this might be a guy to watch. But as we went along, Simon and I both kind of agreed, I don't think he's the one. The power isn't there. There isn't one thing that really stands out other than his
right.
skin. And, you know, Sergey Kovalev certainly found his chin and tested it early. And, you know, he just put him down so fast. He reacted well to his own blood. He gets cut in the second round over his right eye, and he responded. And that's, you know, he's 215. He had 193 wins in the amateurs, 2000 Russian Junior Championships, silver medalist, all the way up to, you know, the World Military Championships, gold medalist, a light heavyweight in India, did that the year before in Germany, and did that the year before in 2005 in Pretoria, South Africa. The guy is a world-class fighter and, you know, developed by now, you know, he first was, I think, with Abel Sanchez. He started also with Don Turner, and Don Turner is still on the team. But then you also have John David Jackson, who's behind him as well, who's now his trainer, and they're down in Florida. The guy is just a beautiful boxer. He's, you know, he's 30. He turned pro kind of late, but he's got all that amateur experience and tough, you know, European amateur experience where you're facing really, really high-quality people. And you can see it in his game. He boxes well. He always comes back with that hard jab, just bang, bang, and he sometimes doubles it up. He mixes up his punches, but everything is very precision. All of it is designed to hurt you. He'll hit you in the arms, and where he hits you is designed to just kind of wear you down. And it was just man versus boy in there with Nathan Cleverley, because I watched Nathan develop, and he just never really seemed to have anything that was going to keep this guy off. You said four, I think. I said eight. But, man, what a beating. It was a one-sided fight. It was not a fight, really.
Much
more than like a minute.
I'm watching the fight, and a lot of times you think, okay, a fighter can sometimes come out a little with the jitters. Hasn't fully calmed himself down before the storm. And a fighter sometimes, if he's not too sure, he ends up doing something he normally wasn't even tending to do. He kind of throws the fight plan out the door, and he just kind of goes on emotions. And with Cleverley, I don't know whether or not that's what happened to him, but here was a guy that his stance was really wide. So when you have your stance really wide and you're trying to be elusive, it's kind of hard because now you have to really rely with your upper body. Now you're not relying on your footwork. You're not relying on your pivoting. You can't roll with the punches. You got to roll under the punches. And that's where Cleverly, to me, kind of screwed up at, where he wanted to bang with Sergey. And you don't want to do that. So I also saw that the jab, Sergey, giving him a lot of problems because the way you said it, Gable, the design of what he was doing was perfect because the jab was a lot, in a lot of ways, was the factor to open up Cleverly to be open for that right hand. And it opened him up. And I know the HBO commentators were saying that he looked a little kind of gassed out or winded. No, I thought what I was watching was a guy that wasn't trying to land everything with conviction. He was trying to time him. He was trying to time Cleverly, and he was trying to make his shots count. And you see this from the greats. What they do, they throw nagging punches out there so that they make you move in a position where they can land their big shots. And that's what I saw, and I really think that the guy is just really – he's going to be a jewel in the sport, man. I was impressed. Cleverly was outclassed. He was outbeaten. He was manhandled on HBO.
Yeah, it was really and his own network. It was brutal, man. I just think he just wasn't ready for this level. I don't really understand. And to his credit, he asked for the fight, but that's where a fighter has to be. You know, it was a voluntary defense. It wasn't even a mandatory. And that's where you kind of have to save a guy from himself.
And that's exactly what the ref did. You know, he just jumped in and said, "Hey."
Oh, it was a great stoppage. That's funny. somebody just sent me a text. Yeah, I think it's been an interesting day, Dave, of info gathering. We didn't even really get a chance to talk beforehand, but I don't know. It's going to be hard to be away for 7 days starting like, you know, next Saturday. I'll be gone. I'll just basically be on vacation.
That's right. We won't be on next week. Gabriel's going to go on vacation, but we'll be back the following week. But it was, you know, I want to move on. Let's move on. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. About 5:30, me calling in Robert Alcazar. We're going to be going really quick here on the radio show. We're doing 2 hours today. Let's move on to Kiko Martinez, man. And we're talking about jabs. That guy, Kiko Martinez, used the jab, man, to his advantage. Smart enough to make I forgot the kid's name already right now. Romero, right?
Yes, Jonathan Romero. Yeah.
Jonathan Romero, making him, you know, they were talking about how upright he was. And I think Kiko saw that right away. The corner Kiko saw it right away. So I always like to see the smaller guy jab upwards. So when they jab upwards, it also, what it does, it creates the gloves to drop down so they could throw the overhand right. And I saw it over and over and over again. But I tell you what impressed me the most about Kiko Martinez, man, is that, dude, he was mopping every inch of Romero's body with every shot. He never gave him time to recoup. He never gave him time to breathe. And he really didn't give the boxer a chance to think.
He just was all over him, man. It was kind of brutal. You know, he just wouldn't – anytime Romero moved, he just – and it brought some great things out of Romero. You know, every time he moved, he would just have him – Martinez would be right there, and he'd be pole-axing him with that jab or double jab, and then just boom, 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 just working to the body, coming upstairs. It was relentless. And, you know, I'm trying to bring up the copy box numbers. That's why I'm kind of struggling with my analysis here. But it really is interesting. I'm very curious to see him look at the historical numbers. I'm pulling them up. Because Martinez just – he never got tired. He just kept throwing punches, like, for six rounds. And Romero –
well, he didn't chase him. He didn't chase Romero. I mean, here's an effective way of cutting off the ring. It's staying your boxing stance. You know, if you're a fighter out there and you're, you know, amateur, or you're looking to get in the ring and somebody's trying to show you how to cut off the ring, cutting off the ring, first off, is very exhausting, okay? Because you pretty much have to predict what the other guy's going to do right away. But there's an easier way of doing it, and that's always staying in position. okay? It doesn't mean you're making big steps. It doesn't mean you're rushing in. What it means, though, is that you're just staying in your position in your boxing stance, and you're moving forward, and you're moving to the left, or you're pivoting to the right with your back foot. And that's what Kiko Martinez did. And he was able to conserve that energy because he didn't spend it with his legs. What he did is he spent it with his arms where it counted. And that's, to me, that's what made it so impressive. He did cross his legs here a few times here and there. But if you watch the entire fight, watch his legs. He really doesn't stumble. He really doesn't foul up on his feet. He keeps his stance in position, which always led for him to cut that ring off a bit quicker and easier against Romero.
Yeah, I mean, the guy, wow, that's interesting. He was outlanded. I'm just looking at his history. You know, in the Carl Frampton fight, Martinez was outlanded 200 to 130 total punches, 55 to 27 jabs, 145 to 103. Historically, though, looking at his last two fights, Martinez averages like 52 punches thrown, 52 and a half per round. His average connect would be like 16. Connect percentage 31.5 or 31.1%. He just seems so relentless to me. I don't know what the CompuBox numbers ended up being on this fight. It doesn't, CompuBox's website doesn't seem to have that. But it's just kind of, I don't know. It was an interesting performance to me. And that watching Romero too, who boxed well and kept trying to get, at first he was getting to the middle of the ring. And then Martinez kind of took over, really kept him in the corners and on
those
the ropes.
Those body shots just took it out.
It really did. But then he found the uppercut, and there was a little bit of a reprieve. You know, he had that right uppercut, and then after a while, that didn't even matter anymore. He just got steamrolled. It was
I think a lot of folks don't really get what the body shots do, but this is when you know the body shots have come into effect. When I started noticing Romero wasn't turning his hips when he was throwing his left hook, or he was trying to, you know, when he was throwing the right hand, he wasn't turning over completely. He was pretty much very stationed. And that told me right there, his sides are hurting already, or he just can't function. And to me, it was just watching the guy slowly slow down, being broken apart, and Kiko Martinez and his team knew it and stuff. And I think that's what gave him the added energy to keep going forward and land punches. Gable's on mute again.
I think Efron will be an interesting guy to talk to about this fight too, because he's faced Martinez and he's had to deal with, you know, that kind of, like they call it, you know, it's like a rain shower of punches. He was outlanded. Actually, I'm sorry, I got confused. He faced Romero, not Martinez.
Right.
Romero actually outlanded him 367 to 101. He threw a lot of punches in that. That's what it says a lot about Martinez, in that he was able to overcome Romero and kind of wear him down and get him to not, you know, because Romero on this historical comparison here that I've got, this is looking at his last four fights, he averaged like average punches thrown 57, average connected 22, connect percentage was 39%. His jabs averaging 24 to Martinez is only mere 13.8. Pretty much everything is almost double, you know, 6.8, 3.4 average connected jabs per round. Really the big difference, I think, between them here, and this is interesting too, is that Romero lands on average 33 punches per round, or power punches per round, or he throws 33, connects on 15.6 with a total connect percentage of 47.4, whereas Martinez was like 38.7 power punches thrown, 13 landed, for only 33% total. So it's kind of interesting comparison of the two guys. And then when you look at the way the fight actually played out, with Martinez just absolutely kind of dominating him, I don't know, it's just an interesting fight. It was a trip. And it's a guy that you have to say, you know, where does this fight lead? Why isn't this fight being with, you know, talked about with Guillermo Rigondeaux? I think it's been to his absolute disservice. And he's come out, you know, and Gary Hyde have come out and just said, enough of this treatment from Bob Arum. This is ridiculous. That's his promoter saying, oh, well, HBO vomits, you know, about this guy. And then why do you have him? Do you have him so that the other people don't get him? I don't understand that. And the denigration of you know, one of the great champions of our time. Do we not love boxing? And yet we'll just kind of trash Rigo because he's quote-unquote boring. When you look at the common denominator in his last fight, look at all his fights and go, who was the common denominator? Who was the boring guy? It was Nonito Donaire, not Rigo. He's generally in pretty good fights. He's got a hyper knockout ratio for a guy with only 12 fights. I don't understand the hate, but it seems to me that Kiko Martinez, who's got a belt now, and Rigondeaux, who's got two belts, that makes three. That's a major unification bout. Why isn't that fight being talked about? And why wouldn't HBO be interested in showing it? If you just showed Kiko freaking Martinez, you know, why aren't you going to put him in there with Rigondeaux? I don't understand the thinking. I think everybody kind of rushes to judgment on these things, particularly on Twitter these days.
Well, I think in fairness, too, that Kiko Martinez called out Nonito Donaire asking for that fight. So I think it's just going to be left on what they decide to do. You know,
why call out Nonito? I don't understand.
I didn't get that either, but, you know, I mean,
he must know who that fight leads to, the fight that he was going to. Somebody must have laid that out, that, don't worry about Rigondeaux, that's not the fight. Call out Donaire, because he's going to need a date.
He's going to need a date, and he probably will get a little bit more money than fighting Rigo.
But at the same time, you know, Donaire's also talked about moving to 26 or possibly 30. So at this point, he's just kind of dealing with his family and handling that. So it's really hard to say, you know, where he goes from here. I don't know. It'll be interesting.
Definitely will be interesting finding out. And now we're going to be calling in right now Robert Alguazar, and we'll get back to the fight, and we'll talk some more boxing here on Leave and Ring. But let's call in. Let's call. And we had Robert on last time, who used to be the trainer of Oscar De La Hoya. And if you don't remember that, man, that was a really good interview. It was a while back. It was like, what, a couple of months ago, I believe?
Yeah, about 2-3 months ago. I'm still looking up these punch stats. It's kind of weird. It's nowhere to be found.
Yesterday, I was able to find the Corona it's limited edition with the pictures and all that. I don't know if you saw that on my Instagram, man. I was excited and happy, even though there was no Broner. They didn't have a Broner, but I heard that the Broner face is going to be on the toilet paper.
Exciting. That's hilarious.
Just a guy likes to spend his off season on the toilet, wiping his ass with dollar bills. They probably figured, well, oh my, I got to do this again.
Dun, 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 dun. Very strange. Where are the punch stats? Come on, ESPN, you guys are stat whores. But Rigo Anselmo Moreno is just. Yeah, you can't blame HBO for not wanting to put that fight on. I don't want to see that fight. I'd much rather see. I mean, it styles make fights, and I think we're not trying to make a boxing match. We're trying to make a fight, I think. And with Rigo Moreno, you're just asking to go to sleep and to kind of reinforce the idea that these are boring dudes. You got to match the boxer with somebody aggressive like Kiko Martinez, who won't take a jab and a step to the side for an answer. I think that's what great matchmaking is all about and great entertainment is all about. I like Moreno, but we'll maybe put him in with Kiko Martinez. But just don't put them together. That is a dip that I would not put a chip in.
It's telling me there's a network problem calling them in. I don't know why. Error. Let me keep trying again. Let me text his publicist and ask him if he can call in. Hold on, give me a second here, and because I don't know what's going on, I don't know why. Hold up. But let's roll into the main event on the HBO. Go ahead and give your breakdown.
Okay. Actually, I was going to roll into something else that's kind of, you know, we'll just take the TRT break here. At this point, you know, because I'm covering this so much, you have to look at all the other sports. You can't just look at boxing and drugs. And I know everybody gets tired of it. I know it's kind of weary, and I keep talking about it and hammering it. But it's important. And why it's important is, okay, you know, I mean, like some people say, the baseball records are a big deal. The home run record, damn it, it's ruined. Even though, you know, the 61 by Roger Maris has an asterisk next to it and always had because of the elongated season. I guess various other reasons. If you care about baseball, you know them. But the steroid era apparently is some other terrible, worse thing than that. And that's, you know, in a way, it kind of signifies what that era was about, which is using these drugs. It was kind of part of the culture to go bigger, you know, faster, stronger. But in combat sports, and why I care about it so much, is that, you know, it upsets the natural order of things on some level. The use of EPO, where a guy could maybe, say, throw more punches than he normally does and not get tired and be relentless, kind of, you know, circumventing nature in order to achieve a desired result. You know, the recovery is one thing, but taking things like EPO, IGF-1, and IGF-2, there's another drug whose street name is the lightness, that's actually not a banned substance. It's part of a piece I'm working on right now. These things, we need to look at them. We need to look at the regulation. And a big part of this is there's a controversy, why I bring this up. There's going to be a bout in the UFC at 205 pounds between Dan Henderson and Vitor Belfort, two guys that are on TRT, testosterone replacement therapy. They're going to be doing this in Brazil. And just after UFC 163 that just happened, the UFC came out and said all of our guys tested negative. At that same day, the World Anti-Doping Association suspended the Brazil lab for having substandard policies, or, you know, subpar standards. So now they're going back with Henderson and Belfort, who are on TRT, to Brazil. And people should know that, and they should pay attention to it, because it's shady. It just smacks of collusion between the promoters, in this case the UFC, drug users. And these guys aren't, you know, I mean, they're going to be facing each other. So it's two guys kind of knowing what the deal is. But there are other cards out there. There was two other guys today that were granted TUIs for testosterone. They didn't say what they were given it for, but both guys, according to other sources, were on TRT. And they're not facing each other. They're facing dudes that aren't. It's a problem that we all need to look at. And because the UFC is much more organized, they're like, you know, and they've kind of taken over their whole sport. There are others trying to rise, but they're the main one. They're setting precedents that, because they're kind of more unified than we are, that we need to pay attention to as we try to unify our sport and regulate it instead of being a series of individual business transactions and making it something that's safe, because it is ultimately about the fighter's safety. That's what it's about. It isn't about VADA, USADA, all these arguments, or Memo versus Conte, or anything else, or me trying to make a name for myself. It's about the Robert Rodriguez's of the world, who gets knocked the hell out by Mickey Bay, who had a 30-to-1 TE ratio. And Mickey Bay, who didn't know any better, or didn't know what was in his system. The lack of education among fighters is striking. It's frightening. And it's ultimately dangerous. And we shouldn't have to wait until we get congressional oversight to come in because somebody got killed by a guy that later tests positive. And maybe that positive has been covered up. And then we find out, you know, that this is even worse than we could ever possibly imagine. Before we get there, we should start really talking about regulation and unification and a uniformity of rules.
I know. God.
It's a really ugly thing. There's a fight between Dana White and some reporters right now who are calling him on this going on Twitter right now. That's why I kind of jumped to it. The lab, it's just kind of hilarious. What's funny is that the articles came in on Twitter like within like 5 minutes of each other. It's like, everybody's clean, the lab's suspended. Like, well, wait a minute, who do we believe?
Wait a minute, exactly.
What's going on with Mr. Mann?
He's going to be calling in right now. I don't know what's going on. I was trying him on Skype, but for some reason it's saying that there's a network problem. This never happened before, so I don't know. So he'll call in, and then we'll pass him through. And at about around 6 o'clock, we're going to be calling Efren, who's got his fight with Rafael Marquez. And I'm actually excited about that fight, man. It's just like last week, Alan Sanchez is going to have his due with Luis Collazo. Some really good fights. We're going to see Maurice Harris back in the ring. He's going to be facing Amir Mansoor. And there's some Julio Kid Diaz is going to have his rematch a day before the Build the One Mayweather and Canelo. He's going to be going against Sean Porter. So some good fights being made up. You know, I know the first fight was it was a back and forth. You know, but.
It was a back and forth between you and me too for a lot of it, but
yeah, and you know what though, it's really what the fight that gave him the opportunity to go against Amir Khan. So to see this guy just mix it up again, I think Sean Porter obviously wants to have his due and show that it was I think in his mind and in his heart he thinks it was a fluke. But with Julio Diaz, I mean, this kid just doesn't he doesn't go away. There's some fighters out there, Maurice Harris. From Kermit Cintron, from Rafael Marquez, Sugar Shane Mosley. These guys, they don't want to go away.
Now, Kermit actually contacted me recently. We're supposed to do an interview pretty soon here. I'm getting ready for my vacation, which is probably the first real vacation I've taken. I don't know how long, which is taking a lot out of me. But when I get back, we should talk, or hopefully if he calls me later tonight or tomorrow, I'll get that interview out, and I should have some pieces coming out all during next week while I'm on vacation on Max Boxing. But Kermit pretty much just said, you know, I'm going to be back, and probably going to be back around that weekend for the September 24th. He may get added on to that, or September 12th. So we'll see. You know, there's some interesting things out there for him. There's a really good fight on there that I like, a couple of them on that. This is at the MGM Grand Las Vegas, Nevada, on Fox Sports 2, Thursday, September 12th. So you got Sean Porter versus Julio Diaz at welterweight. Then you got Badu Jack versus Marco Antonio Peraban, super middleweight. That's a tough fight. Peraban is no joke. And Badu Jack is a young guy that people are big on, but you know, I want to see how real his power is, and I want to see how tough his chin is. And then Hugo Centeno Jr. versus Julian Williams is going to be another tough fight where we're going to find out exactly what each guy has. I think that's going to be a tough fight that's going to be hard fought.
You know, Golden Boy, man, are really stacking up their fight cards, and I know a lot of us have always been very critical of how they've done their matchmaking, but it's almost like they've heard it. They heard what a lot of us had to say, and they're saying, okay, we're going to give you all the best fights we can that are available to us. But at the same time, I'm a bit worried because they're putting up a lot of good fights that what are we going to have for next year?
That's the thing. I wonder, when they're done firing the gun, what are they going to have left? You know, because
okay, hold on. I believe we got
– Sweet.
I'm sorry cutting you off, but we have Robert Alcazar with us here on Leaving the Ring. Robert, are you there, brother?
Yeah. Hi.
You know what it was? Emily, she had given me the first digit was wrong. That's what it was. That's why I wasn't going through. But hey, man, hey, thanks for coming on again here on Leaving the Ring with us. Last time we had you on, we had an awesome time. A lot of fight fans, our listeners, they loved hearing from you and the discussions that we were throwing out there. So, hey, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
So, Robert, There's two reasons why we wanted you on, okay? One of them is that you got the young Mexican kid out of Mexico, the redheaded kid, Saul Canelo Alvarez, to be facing Floyd Mayweather. And then obviously we want to talk about some previous things that you've done in your career. But I'm going to go off with the Saul Canelo Alvarez. Now, I know Golden Boy, they've been looking for some time. Since Oscar has left the boxing scene and has become a promoter, they've been trying to find another Oscar De La Hoya to fill in those shoes. What are your thoughts and what do you think about Canelo? Is the kid being a bit rushed, or do you think that he's got the goods the way your kid had when it was time for him to step up when he got in the ring with Tito Trinidad?
Yeah, of course. They are trying to find the next De La Hoya, but it's about, 20 years already, and they have not found one yet. And concerning this Canelo, the kid got a huge potential, but unfortunately he's not ready yet. They have done a great job by giving him the whole publicity they give him so far, but that publicity pass him way ahead from his boxing ability. He is not leveled yet. They spend more time give this kid publicity than they should be worried about teaching how to fight better. The kid got a great potential, but he needs more time. He is not ready. In my knowledge, he don't belong at that level yet. But only time is going to tell.
Let me ask you this. As a trainer, okay, and being in the position that you were at, you know, in the beginning, you had a lot of commentators, HBO, matter of fact, their commentators, they would downplay what you were doing with Oscar. They were saying, like, well, he's an amateur trainer. He doesn't have the experience. He's going to end up folding and falling apart. With Canelo's team, do you think that they're just in for the moment? Not really, like, they don't want to believe what they have. They really are just kind of hoping that he's going to rise to the occasion.
Well, like I say, that's a brand new team in boxing, and then they need time, and only the time is going to tell. Right now, like I tell you before, they just not ready. They are not ready at this level. They don't belong at this level yet. They need, I mean, a lot of work. They have done a great, great job by protecting this kid, by picking his opponents up with extra. They've been too careful with the opponents they've been selected on the past. And that's a huge, huge mistake. But they build them up to the level what they are going to make probably the best payday in boxing history. But like I say, this Canelo guy is not for reals yet. He got a great potential, like I say, but in my knowledge, he's not ready yet. And concerning the other area, you know, up to the same, the people from the press and the experts of boxing, you know, to qualify the kind of coaches Canelo has, you know, only the time is going to tell, you know, if they are doing good or they're going to be wrong. But right now, it's not time to, you know, to qualify them yet because they have earned nothing yet.
You don't even rate the where do you rate the Austin Trout win? Like, is it almost like this fight, in a sense, could be compared for me like Kermit Cintron when he fought Teddy Reed, and it was a tough 8 rounds, and Kermit got rocked a few times, and then he came back and he stopped Teddy on his feet, and then they did surgery, and then they threw him in with Margarito. They just jumped from like one level, a fight he's supposed to win and he struggles in, to Margarito. And this fight, I mean, do you think he was supposed to beat Austin Trout? How do you feel about that fight in preparation for this fight? Does it even matter?
It's basically no match because we like it or not, Floyd Mayweather today on the Earth planet is the best fighter right now at this time. And like I said before, to me, Canelo got only a 20% chance to win because Canelo is still too robotic. He asked a permission, one foot to throw a right hand or left hook. And by when he tried to do that to Floyd, and Floyd not gonna be there. So, and the only chance Canelo has is to catch Floyd with a solid punch. That's the only chance he had. But you know, how many fighters before have done that to Floyd? It's not impossible, but almost.
Let me put this scenario to you. This is going to be my pick. Both guys are kind of natural counterpunchers, particularly now at this late stage of Floyd's career. But Canelo doesn't seem like your typical, like, aggressive Mexican. He wants to box his way there. And so both guys, like, offense will be at a premium. What do you think about a draw?
No, like I say, Canelo is too robotic, too predictable. He don't got no breather. He don't know how to use his distance. He don't got no jab. I mean, he don't know how to bounce. I mean, he's too green for Floyd right now at this time. And like I say, it's going to be very, very, not impossible, but almost to Canelo catch clean, solid punch to Floyd is going to be very tough. And he needs to do that in order to have any chance. If he going to start boxing like the way he did with Throat, I mean, who's going to fight? and Floyd is going to beat this guy easy by points.
What do you think about the 2 pounds? You know, people are saying, oh, well, he's only losing a pound and a half. But you saw that he comes in, like, 166 and 0.8 at the 30-day mark. He's got to get down to 152.
It's terrible. That's the argument, you know, that people he got around. That right there, you want to start qualifying, you know, that people, whoever, you name the coach, conditioning coach, assistant, whatever, whoever is around him, I mean, it's a terrible, terrible job to do that. How can this guy at this level, that means he had to lose 5 pounds a week. How can a professional people around a fighter of this magnitude can allow that to happen? There's no way. And look at Floyd. He's underweight already.
Yeah, 150.8. You know,
that's the difference on professionalism at this stage. Floyd, exactly, he knows what to do. He's a professional 100%.
I would agree with you on that, because I see Gennady Golovkin. When I lived in Los Angeles, I would see him fairly often at press things. And he was always like 163, 164. He's around his weight most of the time. Some people would say that makes him a small middleweight. I'd say it just makes him a professional. So why do you think this fight was made? Do you think they were rushing because they lost money on Guerrero?
Exactly.
Or is it just
no, who knows? Only they know the reason.
Right.
But in my opinion, that's only my opinion, they've been building this kid, like I say, with publicity, not as a good fighter. And all what they're doing is a payday. Because like I say before, and I think this fight is going to be the richest fight in boxing history.
They're going to sell more
pay-per-views on this fight than any other pay-per-view on boxing history.
You know, I was kind of feeling that. I'm a little worried that it may not happen just because of the whole Time Warner Cable, you know, CBS Showtime thing. They kind of lost some markets. But I still get the same feeling. Do you look at this fight, how would you compare this fight to, say, Trinidad versus De La Hoya? Is it a very different thing? Because it felt like, you know, Tito had set the defense record, I think, at 14 defenses. I think De La Hoya was the 15th. Oscar had defended, I think, 7 times the belt he got from Pernell Whitaker, which was like the linear belt. Tito had the IBF. Is it very different, or is this like the 2013 microwave version of that fight?
It's very different. I mean, this fight, we all are going to have the chance to see it. It is not going to be not even half of the excitement of what we did on De La Hoya on that fight. This fight, like I say, because Canelo don't got the rhythm to go to fight. He don't fight. He's only trying to defend himself. He just tried to do counter punch. He don't have the problem he got. He don't fight.
Right. That's what people say. He's going to be the bigger guy. But, yeah, he doesn't fight that way.
You know,
it doesn't matter.
We were talking about last week, Robert. And I was, you know, I was mentioning on the radio show last week, I don't know if I mentioned it last week, but I was talking to Gable about when I talk to like a lot of my family members or friends or people that I know, or even if I'm at a bar and I'm talking boxing, a lot of the folks that, or I've even seen it on Twitter and on Facebook, a lot of folks keep trying to compare this fight to Julio Cesar Chavez versus Melvick Taylor, and I'm like, where are they getting this from? Canelo doesn't even fight like Julio, you know?
No, exactly. Like I say again, including the fight you just mentioned, this fight is not going to show not even the half of excitement of those two fights you just mentioned to me right now. No, no. Why? Because, like I said, Canelo don't fight. He's not ready. He don't know how. And the example is how to fight Floyd is very clear. Is right there. Look at what Cotto did to Floyd. Look at the way he fought Floyd. Look at the way Chavez Jr. fight Martinez on the last round.
Mm-hmm.
If Canelo decides to fight like that, then he got a better chance. But like
you
I
think
said,
it has to be all out. I mean, if you were designing a game plan to fight Floyd, would it start with the jab or double jab? To like, I think Cotto had a great plan with Pedro Diaz, where they kind of worked their way up his body.
Exactly. If Canelo wants to have a chance, since from the opening bell, he needs to try to go knock this guy out. He needs to go and fight. Otherwise, it's no chance.
Yeah, I agree. But let me ask you this here, Robert, and I'm just curious, okay, because since the Golden Boy Promotions has been made, like I said, they've been trying to look for another Oscar De La Hoya. Do you think Oscar really wants another De La Hoya out there? And do you think that's why this fight's been a bit rushed? Among the perfect example, Vicente Escovedo, he was a bit rushed. Golden Boy has the tendency of rushing their fighters a little bit too often and too easily. Do you think in the hearts of hearts, do you think that Oscar really wants to find somebody that can surpass him?
Well, that's exactly what he's been saying, basically, in every single fighter that he signed. It's a good example. Just the guy you just mentioned right now, Vicente Escovedo. I remember when they, at the beginning, when they signed him at first, what they say, they throw all this publicity. Oh, this is the next Oscar De La Hoya. Oh, this is the next Oscar De La Hoya. And then what happened? Why? Because that company, Golden Boy, they don't have somebody to teach those fighters how to fight like De La Hoya. That's why they are stuck big time. Look at what happened to this other kid from East L.A. His name right now.
Is it Frankie Gomez you're talking about?
Exactly, that one, that kid, Frankie Gomez. Look at when they signed him at first. They used the same plan. Oh, this is going to be the next great Oscar De La Hoya, this and that. And
I remember that.
Where's the kid at? Yeah,
they gave him a bunch of money and he got tired. He got a bunch of money and just kind of chilled and hung with his boys. Then he went to jail. I think some part of him too. I think they grabbed him way too early. You know,
Let's be fair though. I mean, Frankie went to jail with a lot of hot pockets.
He did.
But like I say, they don't have somebody to teach. You know, if they really wants to build the next De La Hoya, I mean, they don't have the personnel to do it.
Well, let me ask you this: do you think that it's because, like you said, they don't have anybody to teach their fighters this? Are you saying that there's unexperienced people in that company?
Well, who knows what's going on? But look at the company; they not even have their own gym. All those fighters from that company are training somewhere else. That company don't have, like I say, their own gym where the fighters from Golden Boy go to work out, go to train.
What do you think about just kind of jumping out of this and into just kind of overall training for fighters, the whole drug testing thing that's going on in the sport? As a trainer, you know, and you've kind of traversed different generations, De La Hoya's generation, the fighters even coming into that, you know, into his period, are much different to me than the ones before or ones during that period. So I'm just curious where you stand on drug testing in the sport and the standards of the sport in terms of health and safety for these fighters.
who is being done, who's been done a good job on concerning safety rules, regulations, and protecting the fighters. That's the president of the WBC organization, Mr. Suleiman. Looks like in boxing, looks like this is the only organization who's is worrying about the fighters, because that's the only organization who's always is looking for something better for the fighters, retirement plan, from the 15 rounds to 12, to attach the glove on the thumb finger, the four ropes on the ring, and all kind of measures.
That's all
like
WBC.
I say, yes, exactly, Mr. Suleiman is the president of the WBC organization.
That's interesting. That answer really caught me off guard. Most people kind of look at him in a different light in the sport. I mean, I guess people within the industry, would, like yourself, would see him differently, but the fans kind of look at him almost like a Don King type of character, you know, but just only in Mexico. Where do you think that comes from?
Well, since the television got involved, it's a different that basically the television killed basically the business on the arenas. That's from past decades to these recent years, that's the boxing turned out more to be a business than to build a real fighters. That's why this new sport, UFC, is basically taking over boxing and the majority of the cars. That sport brings more people to the arena than boxing today. Boxing probably is an exception, like this coming fight, Canelo Floyd, bring more people, but basically the other sport is bringing more people today, because they televise, they sell pay-per-views, and before that happens, I mean, those arenas was packed. And today, before, in those past decades, fighters used to be more for rings, because was less divisions for to fight for a title. So they add too many divisions, super this, lighties, and you just name it, all kind of belts. Before was only one belt, and look at that today.
Yeah, I mean, there are people that argue against it, but I always think it gives fighters more opportunity the more belts there are. And TV, but it did, it diluted things. You know, when TV got involved, every fight had to be a championship fight. 12 fits better into networks. I've always wondered why they didn't do 13, because it seems like 12 makes more for more draws. But certainly it is safer. I wanted to ask you, too, I don't want to take up all your entire night, but the De La Hoya Trinidad fight, it was really reported on. You know, they did a Legendary Nights on it. For you as a trainer, and heading out of the career of De La Hoya, and he kind of certainly went, I think the end of his career was more about building his company than legacy. Were you unsatisfied not getting a rematch and not doing that fight again and kind of just getting it right?
Well, the reason that fight, if you notice, we never did a rematch on his career,
yeah,
except one, Chavez fight. And the only reason we make that rematch, that was because Chavez don't give De La Hoya a credit for the first fight by saying that he was already cut. So now we got here the angry De La Hoya, and he decide, he asked for that rematch because he decided to fight Chavez on his own game plan. He decided to fight Chavez toe-to-toe, because the first one was 100% tactical, a game plan for the first one. And for the second one, he decided to play the macho area, and he decided just go toe-to-toe with the guy. And well, obviously what happens.
Yeah, no, and he's fell apart. Well, he also rematched Shane Woodley, with Trinidad,
okay, the reason was this one, because the Trinidad was asking to go 50-50 on the business area. And then De La Hoya felt at the time that he don't need to give that guy the rematch because he felt like he won the fight. Okay, he was willing to give him the rematch if he was, I don't remember the, I believe was
the exact 50, split or whatever.
Something like that. Okay, I don't recall right now. And that was the only reason he decided to give this guy the rematch. And the reason, like I say, he don't want to give him the rematch because he don't want to share his own money with somebody that he already beat. That was his position. And that was the main reason that the fight never get to happen, because Trinidad never decided to accept whatever they offered him. He wanted to go 50-50. And
I think it was like an honor
left,
thing, too. Well, and I think, too, after De La Hoya, he didn't really need to. They were almost kind of like the Manny and Floyd of their time, in that they could say no to each other because they still were going to make some pretty good money fighting other people, you know, and fighting fights that they could win. And they both gave us great fights. It always just kind of, just competitively, I imagine, it would kind of bother you to not. When I say get it right, it's not so much that, but as to kind of get it more definitive. You know, I mean, people can always look at the from the ninth round on and say, well, maybe the first rounds were tight. I always thought the first four were tight. The middle of the fight was certainly Oscar's. And he was more the flashier looking guy in the fight, I thought. You know, he's quicker and the jab and everything, but I thought he got blocked a lot. But then the back end of the fight is what everybody remembers. And I mean, I guess if he had it to do again, he probably would have, in a rematch, I'm thinking, he probably would have stayed toe-to-toe a little more, don't you think? How would you have altered the plan?
No, that was absolutely, that was the original plan that I made. The original plan that I made, that's to try to knock Trinidad out on the first three rounds. If that doesn't happen, and then we're going to execute the game plan that you see it. Okay, but what happened here? But 3 days before the fight, one of his guys bring the tennis, the boots, the tennis shoes, or whatever he supposed to use for the fight, the shoes. Okay, so he was breaking those shoes, and he twist one of his feet, and he cannot train, and he cannot walk for the rest of the week of the fight. I had to ask a permission to the Nevada Athletic Commission to bring a doctor from the sports, doctor from the hospital to wrap his feet, because it was a huge inflammation on.
Oh wow!
And
that's why I
have to adjust the game plan. I decide to play secure. That's why I decided not to risk this kid that night. And even by him doing that, he ended up getting tired in the last two rounds. He, up to the ninth round, like you mentioned, even the ten was kind of like a, you know, close round. The number nine was, I mean, huge, one of the hugest rounds of the Oscar career. But by in the 10th round, he started getting tired a little bit. And by the 11th and 12th, he was tired on those two rounds.
Robert, let me ask you this, you know, because you've been through it, you've been there. When you see fighters struggling and trying to find the perfect fit with a trainer, like Amir Khan, he's been jumping around, even Angulo, Alfredo Angulo.
Yeah, look at that case, Angulo. I mean, every single coach is not for every single fighter. The fighters make a huge, huge mistake by just picking coach by the name, and they don't make any stop and try to ask themselves, this is the kind of coach that I need. This is the kind of coach can be make a team with my style. They look at this Angulo. Look at it. Man, this is probably, I think, probably worse than what he was. And he went with he picked up one of the biggest names in boxing today. And look at his flat footer. He not even move his waist. I mean, he just put his gloves on his face to protect himself. I mean, who's teaching this kid even how to throw a jab?
Does it irk you to see? I mean, because look, I mean, Virgil Hunter to me is a great trainer. His theory in boxing is fantastic. But are some fighters, in your opinion, they just can't learn like the theory of not being hit? I mean, Angulo to me is just a guy. He's more of a rugged guy. He's never going to learn how to slip punch. He's never going to have great footwork. And when you get a guy like that, Robert, do you try to change him and try to make him a pure boxer, or do you just leave it alone and just try to find little things that are going to make him just that bit better?
Yes. You have to be professional yourself and respect yourself first and be honest to these guys. That's a great example you bring to this conversation. I mean, it's no doubt in my mind that this Hunter is a great, great coach. But for Angulo's best interest, for his health, why him as a professional, why he don't tell the guy, you know, just try to find yourself somebody else. But we're not going nowhere. Maybe it's try to find a slugger coach for you. And to me, that's a mistake that fighters make. Look, you mentioned another great example, the Amir Khan.
Yeah.
They just think they pick up a coach with name, and they think that just by having those names on the corner, they're going to win some fights. And they need to worry more about learn and make a game plan and make it work, make it happen.
It seems and like fighters don't really do that anymore, like the game plan. And like I always talk about like a beginning, middle, and end, you know, because you're going 12 rounds ultimately. You kind of break it up that way, and you kind of three acts, and eventually you break a guy down and stop him. I always thought that was the goal. What you're pointing out kind of sounds like what I've been seeing is that there's kind of a diluted product anymore. We don't have as many complete fighters as we used to. Do you think that's what you were talking about also?
Why?
Because of TV?
It's no coaches to teach that. That's why. It's no coaches to teach a fighter how to fight. How many good fighters or how many fighters you know, you see, just simple like that, just to execute a jab, to stand right. Look at the majority of the fighters, they are flat footer. And look at those the kids before.
That's true.
Yeah, so that's a combination today. The fighters make a mistake.
They don't have that bounce and kind of flow that the old fighters like a Salvador Sanchez had, where it's kind of perpetual motion and punches that come off of it.
Look at another great example. Okay, where's the coaches to teach that fighter? Or like you say, probably the fighter don't got the talent, don't got the ability to do something like that. That's why you had to find, to make a team with fighters and with a coach to execute whatever way they decide to fight.
I think with Hunter, though, I mean, I think Hunter is a great coach. I think he has the fundamentals, and he's a very intelligent trainer. But I think that in order for you to learn or to soak in what the information that he has, you have to be with them from the beginning. I think coaches like Hunter, you just got to be there, like with yourself too, Robert. I would have to be with you for 10 years to grasp and to understand the logic or the theory of what you're trying to translate it into me to perform in a ring. I think a lot of fighters nowadays, they get it confused. They think that punching power is a success. They think that having a big promoter, it's going to lead you to millions. I think even publicists and managers, they don't have the grasp or the understanding what the business and what it entails to be part of that business of boxing.
Yeah, you're right. Exactly. That's exactly what's going on today in boxing. That's why it's very, very hard to find now the next Ali, the next De La Hoya, the next Leonard, who's going to teach somebody. Look at the gyms. You just go to any gym you want to, and those gyms are packed. Where's the trainers to go to teach somebody? Like I said, El Salvador Sanchez. He's got a great teacher behind him. Look at Chavez. That's the styles. When I start working with this kid here on Las Vegas, Jesse Vargas, that kid called me himself, and he told me, look at Mr. Alcazar, I don't want to keep fighting the way I'm fighting anymore because I'm not going nowhere. I want to learn your style. Are you willing to help me? I say, okay, let's go check it out. We went to the gym.
It's been a lot more exciting.
Exactly. But look, how many fighters is more like that?
That's true. Well, you still have Nacho out there, but he takes a select few guys. And do you think it's hard, too?
I got another kid, the undefeated, Jose Cepeda. Look at this kid. He's 15 fights, undefeated in 15 fights. He's 13 by knockout. That kid called me and said, look, I want to learn your style. But on top of that, I want you to make a mix on my boxing. I asked him, what is it? He said, I want to fight half like De La Hoya and half like Edwin Valero. I say, no problem. Let's do it. And now that kid fights beautiful right hand and beautiful southpaw. Southpaw like exactly like Valero with that kind of punch. That kid fights beautiful today. Beautiful. He already learned. I've been working with him for 3 years and a half. And finally looks like, I don't know where, but this month, October, he's going to be fighting his first 10-round fight. And like I said, he fought out for right hand, no problem.
That's beautiful, Robert. Technique. That's and that's what I was talking about. I think fighters need to have time. You know, when I see a fighter that already has a name, has a stature, and he jumps over to another trainer right away, to me, it's just that they're just so unsure of themselves. They don't believe in the tools they have already. But before, you know, because we gotta end in a short bit because we're gonna have our next guest call in and stuff. But Ponchito de Vaca is gonna be fighting. He's 2-2 right now, 2 knockouts.
Right.
He's gonna be in the Iron Boy. Give us a little bit of info about him and how excited should we be about this kid?
Same thing with this kid. He came to me. He came personally to see me and ask if anyone and I want to train him. And I started asking all these kind of questions. And then the first thing I did with him when I decided to help this kid, I just put him on hold. He got about 200 and some fights, amateur fights. And I put him on the side and I started working all the way from the bottom again. And I worked with this kid already for 7 months. And look, in those 7 months, he got not just 2 wins. Look at the way he wins those fights. And especially the last one. I mean, it was not a mismatch the way, because I don't believe that to build a career on my fighters like that. I don't let my fighters fight a mismatch. You know, have to be even. That way my fighters got opportunity to show me that they make an advance. And the majority of the fighters, the managers, and the promoters, they build the fighters by mismatching. That's why the boxing is the way it is today. But look at this Canelo guy. I mean, he got 40-some fights. Tell me one real fighter he fought before. One, give me one for real. A real guy that he faced before. None.
Some would argue, Robert, that Trout was a, you know, I thought it was a good test. He impressed me. He showed me something there. But I, you know, the entirety, I do agree in what you're saying. But that's a whole, you know what, I mean, I think we can have you on forever, to tell you the truth, brother.
Seriously, Robert, show, don't worry. Like, don't miss this Conchito. It's going to be another exciting fight because this kid, he put a show for the fans and for the people who got the chance to go to the fights. I mean, this kid is going to be something one day. He just got the potential. Only the time is going to tell. Right now, it's going to take him at least 3 years to know where he at, to know if he really got chance to do something in the sport. But from here to there, that's what we are doing. We're just trying to see if he can have the potential to do something like that. So we are taking one fight at a time, and we see only God and only time is going to tell.
Absolutely. I agree, man. And again, I really appreciate you taking the time. I can't wait to have you on again. Man, I wish I could have you on next week and the following week and after that and after that.
We can do it another time. Anytime you want, you know where to reach me now.
Robert, don't tell me that because I'm a stalker. I will stalk you. I will be in front of your house with a mic, man.
That's always educational, man. I appreciate, like, you know, telling us how it is. It's awesome, you know.
I love the fact that you're still in the business, you're still involved, and, you know, again, I appreciate you coming on and talking to us, and I thank Emily again.
Remember, I was out for 10 years, remember? I take out for 10 years, and Edwin Valero is the one who brought me back, and I make him a world champion. And now, up to Valero, I am here with Jesse, and we'll see. He's going to have the opportunity in the next three fights to be a champion. So we'll see.
Guys still talk about Valero in the gym. You know, I live up in San Francisco now. I was living in L.A. when we first talked. And I work out at this gym, the world-class boxing gym, over in the Mission. And a guy yesterday was just working out. And it's just the impression that Valero left, you know, just with the short period of time that he was in the sport, it's pretty amazing, you know. It's just so sad the way he went.
Exactly. That was a unique fight. And, well, God got a different plan for him. So,
yeah.
But that was a great experience to work with him. And we did a lot of good things, and including winning a world title. That was special.
I remember that day. Actually, that's the day I met you at the media day over at the Westside Boxing. They're on Pico, just outside of Koreatown. And I remember you were wearing like these braces with on your arms with the pads, and you would had to keep stopping and shaking your hand out because he was hitting you so hard. I remember his handshake that day. We did an interview, and he smacked my hand, and he squeezed it. It was the hardest thing. He was like made of steel. He was special. I think he would have beaten them all from at 140, you know.
I used to ask him, you know, why you squeeze when you shake somebody's hand, why you squeeze it so hard for? And he used to tell me all the time, you have to let people know who you are.
Okay. Well, I can without a doubt say that it is the handshake I will never forget is Edwin Valero.
Oh, that man.
That's crazy. Again, Robert.
That's funny. Thank you for that.
Okay. You calling in. I can't wait to do it again. And I think the next conversation it needs to be about Edwin. The whole segment needs to be about Edwin.
Yeah.
We can do that. No problem.
Okay, brother. Thank you again.
All right.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Wow, that was nice.
It was, man.
That's funny. Yeah, I got to find that interview. I keep forgetting to look for it. I'm sure it's still in the Max Boxing archives. And it's funny because I don't speak very well. My Spanish, I understand it better than I speak it. And I just never really had anybody around me that speaks it. You know, I should have dated like a Mexican chick for like 2 years at least. You know, I had a lot of other 2 year relationships. I should have mixed in like a just non English speaking Mexican girl.
Now you sound like one of those spiders saying, you know what, I need to get Virgil Hunter and he's gonna teach you how to jab now. You know, just because you date a Mexican girl doesn't mean you're gonna speak Spanish, Gabriel.
Yeah, I probably would have like 6 or 7 kids right now and be Catholic.
Hey, what's up with that? Don't make me start pumping up my Vicente over here, brother.
It's just, you know, stereotypes are easier. They're quicker.
They are quicker and stuff, you know. Well, you know, Adrian Broner broke the whole black star, you know, doesn't like to go down on a woman stereotype.
Wow, that's so nice.
You know, well, I was like, I just had to throw it out there because, you know, you can't do the stereotype.
But I am ready for 5 kids. That should be a t-shirt.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
Broner.
Danny Jacobs. Hey, man, congratulations. He looked fantastic against Lorenzo. You know, he's, you know what? In the beginning, and, you know, and I hope this doesn't sound terrible, but, you know, I was a fan of Danny Jacobs. He got stopped by Pirog. He left the sport for some time because of cancer. He beat it, came back. He's been looking up. You know, they obviously had to give him a softie for a moment. And it continued like that. Now they gave him in with somebody that can hit. And he did what he had to do. You know, and the one thing I didn't want to do was jump up and down for Danny Jacobs because we really didn't know where he stood at. I mean, to me, it was more of a lot of fight fans, to me, the way I felt, that they were more cheering for him because of the situation of the past, that they weren't really given the assessment of what he's doing in the ring. Now we can celebrate. Now we can say, man, this guy is...
I like him.
Yeah, we're liking it, and he's getting himself in position where he left off.
I think it's, and he's better for it. He's better for the loss. He's better for all the adversity. And he's a trip, man. I don't know if you are a friend of his on Facebook. He's so – he's been on the show, you know, many times, and he's just such a positive person, and it emanates from him. And he's, I think, accepted all the things that have happened to him and just – rather than be persecuted by them, learn from them and, like, grow from them and move forward. And you just saw it in the fight. I thought he was much more cautious, really tight guard. He's back to his roots. He's back where it all started, back there in Brownsville. And it just shows. He seems very, very comfortable for himself with himself. I want to see him take a punch and get some adversity in this comeback in his next fight. I'd like to see somebody hit him in the chops. I thought that Lorenzo would do that for him, but... Boy, you know, he showed a nice finishing ability. He didn't take any stupid punches. It was nice execution.
I got to throw this out there really quick because this is funny. When you have commentators like, you know, you have Bernard Hopkins and Paulie Malignaggi, and, you know, they have to make up things on the fly. They have to watch it, and then they have to say whatever they're witnessing. They got to translate it over the air. But by them saying that, and we got to get Danny on because – really, honestly, an impulsive move, sometimes you do it and it works. They said, well, he switched position. No, to me, what I watch, I don't know what you watch, but the guy lost balance. Let's be honest here. He lost his balance. His leg fell, you know, forward. He repositioned himself. Then he threw the punch and it got there. It landed. You know, Danny looked like he wanted to be aggressive. He needed to be aggressive. And he got aggressive. But at the same time, I don't want to sit there and say, oh, yeah, man, he knew exactly what he was doing because he was calm, he was collective, and he ended up switching the position where he needed to be so he can land those two punches. I don't believe that. To me, he lost balance and he fell. In order not to lose balance when he was throwing punches, he adjusted himself and he did it quickly, and it turned out great and fantastic for him.
You know, I think that – yeah, I mean, it's about – boxing is about learning how to relax in chaos and how to create chaos, how to wreak havoc on your opponent the way that you want to do it. But, you know, it's all this kind of elaborate dance that's going on, and you're firing these weapons at each other from, you know, depending on who you're facing, you know, whatever angle. Danny, before, one particular habit he would have within that pressure – was, you know, rather than like let his hands go and let like a fight happen and kind of go into that and be in the center of the storm there, he would back away to the ropes and then go behind his guard and block a shot and then kind of react from that. This time out, any time that he got near the ropes, he would jab, 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 and try to kick out that back leg, you know, pivot and get back out to center of the ring.
You know what, dude? You are absolutely right because, Danny looked like a fighter back in the past that fought protecting an investment.
Yes.
This time around, he fought like a man that said, you know what? It's all or nothing. Been there, done that. There's nothing you can do to me, and I'm just going to put it on the line.
Now, the other guy on the show, as we're coming into our next guest, that I thought really stood out, and they showed highlights, of a third, but it's hard to tell anything from short highlights, but a guy that I was really high on just by meeting him when I was covering the World Series of Boxing, and then by seeing him fight, Terrell Gachet, I hope I'm not screwing his name up, but he's trying to sound somewhat, I don't know, eloquent about it if I am screwing it up.
I've got a call in Ephraim right now, though.
But he... In taking out Austin Markham over two rounds, it was a pure, it was a knockout, 104 of the second. Real methodical, knows who he is, and I got that sense from him. He was a very sensible young man. He's, I believe, only 25 when I met him down in Hollywood. And he just, I like the way he fights, man. I like the way he uses that jab, and it's a hard punishing jab. It's not an amateur jab. There's nothing amateur about his style. All those WSB guys, they have a little something extra that the rest of the fighters out there that are developing don't. And they're also, he's out of Cleveland, Ohio. There's a mean streak to these guys that is been sorely missing from boxing. And he's not like a surly guy or anything. He's actually really cool, kind of humble, soft-spoken guy. But there's a fire in him and a fire in his eyes when you talk to him and the way he fights. I'm really excited about Terrell Gachet. Particularly, I'm a huge middleweight fan, and I think this we're looking at a future world champion. Do we have Efron Iscavias on the line? That was supposed to be the part where. There you go. I hope people can hear the Skype sound.
Yeah.
So yeah, I need to get an interview done with him. But
what's up, brother? How you doing, man?
How's it going?
You just completely threw me off right now, man. I was like, wait a minute, am I on the radio or am I calling him on my phone? Hey, man, Ephraim, brother, for taking the time to talk to us here on Leaving the Ring. You've been a good friend to the show for a very long, long time, man. And this dude, first off, congratulations with this fight with Rafael Marquez. We were talking about this last week, and Alan Sanchez. There's a couple other guys they're getting their, I guess they're just due of finally getting some type of recognition because we all want a fighter that you can face where you can kind of get you that extra push so fight fans can say your name and they can remember you, right? That's what you guys are all looking for. So hearing that you're getting this fight with Rafael Marquez, what was going through the mind? What was going through with your whole team? What was the thought process?
I think number one is the opportunity that we're getting. We know that they're looking right past me. They chose me as an opponent, and well, I'm far from that. They're gonna be surprised when fight comes.
You know what's funny that you said that because when we do our preparation, me and Gabriel, we talk and we talk about like certain things we're gonna ask our guests and all that. And I think I mentioned this to you, Gabriel, or you mentioned it, Gabriel. You were saying like, I wonder if Ephraim thinks he's the opponent. Or is he the guy that's supposed to excel against Rafael Marquez? So you think you're the opponent, huh?
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. I mean, my last three fights, obviously, I mean, two losses and a draw. They see, but they don't know the story behind it. And obviously, they chose an opponent. I mean, he's been out of the ring for a year, so. So I'm just here to ruin all the plans, to work everything out. And I'll be next in line for a world title, hopefully.
What do you think that those two fights did for you, Rico Ramos and Jonathan Romero, who just got steamrolled by Kiko Martinez? I'm going to ask about that one later. But what did those two fights do for you and this draw? I mean, because some guys, particularly you, you're kind of just grinding away. You're still young in your career, only 19 fights. those things could be just as much, you know, learning lessons and a gateway to bigger and better things than just losses. So what do you take from those fights heading into this fight with Marquez, who hasn't fought in a year?
Well, I mean, those losses were, people don't know half of the story. So, I mean, I know I could have won those fights. First of all, with Rico, man, they brought the fight down from a 10 to 8 rounder, which threw me off. But after that, I mean, Jonathan Romero, I already knew, man. I knew I could beat this guy. I know I could beat this guy. It's just people don't know that I changed my diet and, you know, I went to a low glycemic diet, which affected me. I mean, I was weak in the ring. But everybody got to see that I have heart at least. And, well, I'm excited for this fight coming up because I'm back to my regular diet. And plus, I added a few things. And they're going to see that I could switch up my style. I could also box. I'm not just a straight up come at you type of guy. I also have ring smarts, and box around. So I'm a confused Marquez.
I'm curious, you know, because I don't know what you walk around at. I saw you, I think, between fights, but you were in shape. You didn't look like a guy that blows up. But still, you're fighting at a low weight, and you know, at 5'5", that's, you know, it's going to be hard to get there. How hard is it? Is it like Russian roulette in a sense of, you know, how good you're going to feel on fight night after a week of starving down and doing your diet right, that a little thing can just throw you off like that? Is it really that delicate?
To a point, but I think it's really how you rehydrate yourself after the weigh-ins. And I'm really good at that. I know just what to put in my body after weigh-ins, and I feel really good in the fight.
Let me ask you this, because and if I don't ask this, I mean, I have to ask this question because it's kind of been lingering. Ever since I've heard the fight's been announced, it's kind of been lingering in my mind. Rafael Marquez is obviously the younger brother of Juan Manuel Marquez, who's going to be fighting Timothy Bradley, and there's been pretty much a back-and-forth war about the testing. Is there going to be any testing with Rafael Marquez in your guys' fight, or is this something that's being ignored because you're the opponent?
Yeah, I guess so, man. I mean, I really don't have much leverage, so I mean, I there's not much I could do, you know?
Right. I was feeling the same way. Me and Gabriel were talking about this, of you needing this fight, that you basically, if you were to mention it, you think that you just pull out and say, well, screw him, we'll just get somebody else.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I can't afford that right now.
Wow.
And whether whatever it is, deal, I'm coming to win. You know, so
I just find it very surprising that they think you're an opponent, because for one, I mean, you're 30, but at the same time, you're strong, you're active, you throw punches, you come forward. Not to give away that Rafael, because his legs are obviously, they're gone, but he's still got a lot of pop in his hands, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I logic would only tell you that an older fighter like that should be on his way out. This should be a victory party for you. But for them to look at you as an opponent and to pick you, I don't know. I guess I'm just going to throw it out there, man. I just think that's kind of fishy, brother.
Well, they're gonna be surprised. That's all I
hope
to say.
Yeah, I think so too, man. I think so too.
He's coming off a knockout loss too. It's not like, you know, he's on much of a roll. You know, you've got decision losses.
That's true.
You know, and he's what? Geez, he's 3-3 in his last six. So, is it incumbent on you to just go right after him and try to just kind of rattle his cage? I mean, he's been straight, you know, stopped before, straight just like hurt and beaten up. He was stopped in the sixth round against Israel Vasquez. I mean, and he's 38 years old. I mean, how do you approach it? Do you just kind of go up and just beat his old body up, or do you try to drown him in deep waters? You have a few different ways you could go with this.
Yeah, no, I'm gonna my plan is to drown him in deep waters. He's a little older, and I'm always a slow starter. I always start off kind of slow, and I pick it up as the rounds go. So I'm planning on taking him to deep waters and take him out later rounds, hopefully.
Why are you a slow starter? Do you just like to kind of get a lay of the land and get a sense of what they've got?
I don't know. Maybe I don't plan it that way, but every fight I usually do starts really, really slow. And I noticed that Marquez, he's a really hard. He starts off really fast and dies down. I don't know if he throws everything with power and he tires out. But then I'm a better be looking out for his power in the first three rounds.
That's the biggest thing, too, as you go, the further along you go, is experience. I mean, you've gone rounds now. I mean, have you gone, I could be wrong, I should know this. Have you gone the full 12?
Yeah, I did against Romero.
Oh, that's Romero. Yeah, it is 12.
Yeah,
that was 10.
Man, that was all hard, man, because I didn't have the, no, I wasn't, I don't want to say I wasn't properly trained, but I didn't have the proper diet. Going to have the proper nutrients and affecting me in the fight.
I think we had you on after that. It was at Extreme Boxing Gym, if I remember correctly, right? And
yeah, I think that was before, though.
Oh, that's right. It was about
2 years ago.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. All right. It's been a while, man.
How do you think this is going to play out? I mean, in your mind, what's the... Do you think it's going to be a distance fight, or do you think it's going to be inside?
I think it'll be a distance fight. I'm gonna make sure I dictate the pace, make them fight my fight, because they think I'm the type of guy that just comes at you, and they're gonna.
So
I think I won one speed, and no, that's not the case. I'm gonna change it up on them, confuse them.
So you're just coming in to give them a completely different look and what they're going to be training for,
right?
Hey, where are you training out of? Are you still at the wild card, or where are you working out?
No, I'm at the Rock in Carson.
Oh,
right.
Yes, heard about that. Big facility. Nice.
It's got its own chapel.
Yeah, it's church owned.
Oh, wow.
How do you like working over there? The World Series of Boxing guys used to train over there. It's a nice facility,
right.
A couple rings, and isn't that where they're kind of training like the heavyweight program out of there?
Correct, but that heavyweight program's out the door now. They I don't think it's going on anymore. But yeah, that's where I train. I love it there, man. I used to go to that church before you even opened up a gym opened up.
Is that right?
Actually, we're the ones that suggested making it into a boxing gym.
Really?
Really.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's a good space. I really like it. I mean, it's got a ton of bags in it, and it's just wide open. It's huge. And you got a church.
Yeah.
I got an email right now. It's hilarious. I said that one of our listeners throwing out an email for leaving a ring. He said, man, I swear, Efren, his talk tone it doesn't compare to anything of his punching output. He's absolutely right, man. The way you talk is like the way when somebody sees you, they look at you and like, this guy's got to be hyper in your face type of person because the way he fights. But man, when anybody talks to you, like you even threw me off the first time we talked. I'm like, am I talking even or what's going on here, man?
That's right. Yeah, no, man. I've always been like this, man. I've always been the quiet type, shy, you know. But I mean,
which is crazy
because
which is crazy though, because you get on a world stage and you got to do, you got to be somebody. I guess same thing with artists is people that sing or do or even like acting, get on the screen. They're completely different from off of that. I mean, I know I am. I'm not a people person.
Right.
I'm very reserved. I kind of stay back and, watch everybody, not get on the big old mix and stuff like that. I have to be in the right mood in order for me to be a little chatterbox and stuff. But man, but every time I meet you, You're almost the same way. Yeah, yeah. You almost kind of stay back and stuff, and like, okay, all right, but that doesn't matter as long as you do your job in the ring, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's all that matters. I do. I'm like who should I put it? Like a Marquez. You just do the talking in the ring. That's it.
What have you heard about? Let me ask you. What have you heard about the Rafael Marquez camp? Have you heard anything about them? Have they said anything about you? Do they even know anything about you?
No, I don't think so. Last I heard, my cousin just told me, he said that they're looking right past me, that he'll be next in line for a title shot if he gets through me. But like I said, I'm going to derail their plans. I've been training hard, and I'm back with my old coach, and I'm strong. I'm ready. This is my division. He's moving up.
Yeah, he's moving up. Moving in a territory that obviously you've been in for quite some time. So here's my last question for you. If you feel that his power, because he's always been known for a puncher, he's always been known to almost kind of get him out of situations because of his punching power. But if you feel his punch, because I know your game plan is to try to take it the distance and just box him. But if you feel his punch and you say, okay, it's not there because this is a different weight division, do you go for the kill?
If it presents itself, I'm not going to go say I'm going to just go for the kill and get careless, because there's a punch that you don't see coming. Marquez carried the punch to 122 easily, I'm sure. You know, he's moving up one weight class, and I heard he has pretty big hands, so that, I mean, that explains where that power comes from, and I definitely can't get careless.
That's a true professional right there saying that, what you just said right now, man.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Anyways, so
man, yeah, I'm excited to see the fight, man. I think it's kind of even, you know, with everything that where you guys are at in your careers, age-wise, experience, everything. It's what both of you guys need this win. It should make for a really exciting fight. I can't wait.
I was excited the first time I heard about it. I got to tell you, I was like, man, that's great. This is a great fight. This is a great exposure for yourself. It's a good matchup. It's a good way of getting your name out there and finally people seeing what we've been seeing for a long time, a tough, ready-to-go person that's ready to move up. Ibrahim,
right.
Thank you again, brother, again for
thank
taking
for
the time and
me.
Talking to us, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. I can't wait to show everybody. Now everybody around the world could see what I really have, and I'm just excited to go out there and perform.
However you perform, awesome. Man, however you perform, you get that victory, just be sure to say, hey, I leave it in the ring. I left it in the ring.
Left it in the ring. That's it. I like that. And don't forget to download the app, Leave It in the Ring app.
That's it, man. That's it. Thank you, bro.
And also follow me on Twitter and Instagram, FM Boxing.
You got it. You got to follow. You know what, Fight Fans? You definitely got to follow on Instagram, man. I love your Instagram. I like the pictures, dude. I'm a stalker, man. I'm telling you.
Thanks, bro.
All right, brother. You take care.
Hey, thank you guys for having me.
All right,
man. Take it
all
easy.
Right.
That's a great matchup. I can't wait for it. You know,
it is. It's a fun fight.
Yeah, it is a fun fight. And these are the kind of fights, you know. We all want the big names, and the casual fans want to be able to feel like they're intellectual when they talk to us about fights. So you do need these media-built fighters so that we can have the conversation at a pub or wherever a barbecue or a family get-together, or if you just go down to somebody's house and you see a fight coming through on HBO Showtime. But these gym fights right here, these type of fights, are the ones, they're the bloodline of boxing. They're really the ones that continue to give us those moments of the Rocky Balboa, you know, where you go, that's why I love boxing. Friday Night Fights gave us that feeling. Were these guys like world-class fighters? Were they elusive? Were these guys, you know, hit and not get hit type of fighters? They absolutely weren't. But they were the ones what producers and directors and writers want to write about, and what the casual fan or the casual person out there, the buying customer, want to watch.
Yeah, there's drama there. I mean, and you know, Rafa is a guy that we thought was done at age 36. Here he is at 38, still going at it. That's pretty interesting in and of itself. But it should be a fun fight. You know, I think it's going to be on Efron to really tough it out. And when you look at this, you know, too, a guy, in that situation where older fighter versus younger fighter, and I was talking about it earlier about the regulation. The lack of regulation in the sport. I did an interview today that I unfortunately don't think worked. The recorder, I'm trying to figure that out on my computer right now during the show. But with Luis Garcia, and he talked about it, that the sport is unregulated and that it needs to be, there needs to be more unified rules. And so guys like him, he's got a master's degree in what he does and a minor you know, he's got a full background of kinesiology as well as his minors in nutrition. His master's is in kinesiology, looking at my notes. And he talks about how there needs to be a certain, like, legitimacy to what these guys do. And everybody that's on a pay-per-view, you know, those guys need to be tested. In order to get to the TV level, everybody should be tested. If you want to get in on that top level. But I guess on some level, that's just optimistic of us, and that the networks actually don't really care. The promoters don't really care, because the bottom line is that it's all about the money. So I've got a few things. Hopefully, I mean, it's going to be a writing marathon from the time we end the show in about 9 minutes to the time I leave for the desert.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what, though? The beauty is that we can do it. We're going to do it in 2 weeks. And I think in 2 weeks we shouldn't have any guests. We have a lot on our minds. We have a lot of stuff that we need to kind of vent out and just kind of relieve and let our listeners know about and stuff. But let's give our fight take on Adnan Morris and Gonzalez this weekend. I'll let you go first.
Okay. I think it's a dangerous fight. You know, Johnny Gonzalez hasn't lost since like 2009. And he's had, take away, and you caught me off the guard. And I'm honestly still trying to process the fact that Ben Affleck has been announced by Warner Brothers as Batman in the new Superman Batman movie, and I really just got thrown.
I know, I saw that too. I started laughing. I don't know if you heard that when we were interviewing Efren. I read the same thing. And I was like, wow.
Take away the Daniel Ponce de Leon fight, and Johnny Gonzalez has been on a hell of a roll. He's fighting for the WBC featherweight title. With Abner Morris, who took it away from Ponce de Leon. And I think, you know, styles make fights. You know, Johnny at 5'7", with a 69.5-inch reach, he's got a 74.9% KO ratio, you know, 54 wins, 46 knockouts. Yes, he's got 8 losses, been stopped 3 times, but he's got a lot of reach, you know, on 66 inches versus 69 and a half for Gonzalez. You know, Morris is 66. He's 5'4.5". He's going to have to fight his way inside. Now, talking to Luis Garcia, you know, he's been with him for a long time. He's the guy that spotted him with Oscar De La Hoya back losing, an Olympic bid. And he's been with him for, I think this is his 8th fight, but like 9th camp. And he just talked about how Morris is an all-around fighter. He's not great at any one thing, but it's about being great or very good at a lot of things and also superior conditioning. And you can see him, you know, in workout photos, the guy is in superior condition. And over the last few fights, they've been working on explosion and he was able to do that with Ponce de Leon and just get him out of there and drop him twice, get him out of there in 9 rounds. But still, Johnny Gonzalez, with his experience, he came up the hard way, not much of an amateur experience, not many amateur fights. Had to learn on the job. He's now 31. He's still got his man strength. He's not maybe on the other side of the hill. He's working with Nacho Beristain. He's going to have him boxing to his advantages, which is being very tall. He's also going to there's a punch that Abner is very much open for, which is the uppercut. He has a tendency to square up at times or get over-aggressive and square up when he's throwing combinations. I see a Beristain-Johnny Gonzalez uppercut from the front in his future. And if he can take it and he can handle the power of Gonzalez, then he can break Gonzalez down and stop him late. If he can't take the power, it's going to be a hell of a fight. I'm going with Morris by decision.
I'm going to go with Morris by knockout. And I'm going to tell you why. I know that Nacho has made a big difference in his career. And there, and you know what? Here's the thing. That Johnny, to me, still is a guy that any given night you can beat. He's been doing fantastic with Nacho Bernstein. But at the same time, you got a guy that's been consistent. And it's really hard to beat a guy that's consistent. I've always said this. If you stick with the same type of regimen, you stick with the same type of, you know, building yourself and having game plans and being able to adjust to a game plan, you're always going to be very successful. Abner Morris, I'm not a pound-for-pound list kind of guy, but if I had one, Abner's got to be like my top of the list kind of guy. And if you look at his resume, it's very hard to argue that he's not a pound-for-pound level fighter. This guy comes in every time out, ready to fight, well-conditioned, and has a game plan, and he sticks to it. This is not his very first trainer, but it also tells you the intelligence that this kid brings. Johnny Gonzalez, same thing. This is a very competitive fight. I know some folks didn't like this fight, but that's because you just didn't pay close attention to what this was being built up to do. This one makes me laugh about like Dornier and everybody else. this guy's making a case of why he's one of the best fighters in the world. Go ahead, Gabriel.
Look at the people that he's faced, you know. And I wouldn't disagree. Like the Sweet Boxing, Ryan Bivens was saying, you know, he thought that the Eusebio Osejo got that Gonzalez got a gift decision over him. But at the same time, he doesn't look done. Gonzalez is a guy that's kind of up and down in his career, and you got to think that the venue that he's going to be fighting and what he's fighting for is going to raise his game just a little bit. I'm not picking him to win, but I think he could give some problems to Abner. If he lands his Sunday punch, you know, well, generally that's done pretty well for him in the past. But that's, you know, it's like a high-level puncher's chance, I guess.
You know,
him. But you look at what Abner's done. I mean, the guys that he's fought, the gauntlet, it's really hard to point to anybody, like you said, a pound-for-pound type guy. How can you not say that he's an elite-level fighter? Like seeing, you know, Adrian Broner debut at 5 is exactly what Alcazar was talking about. Like, we're crowning these guys before we know who the hell they are. I know who Abner Morris is. He's one of the best fighters in the world.
Yeah, and here's another thing, that the guy that's been able to hurt Abner Morris, and it, I don't know if you really heard him, but Vic Darchinian was able to land some pretty big punches, and he dropped him. So we kind of know more or less what Abner will do next. Johnny Gonzalez has to watch that. He's got to understand that. If I hurt this man, I got to make sure that I jump on him, but at the same time, I'm very intelligent of jumping on him. Because the kid's not going to try to make the same mistake twice, you know. And that's what I'm enjoying with Abner Morris. I think it's going to go by knockout. I think he stops Johnny Gonzalez, to tell you the truth, you know. Johnny's been stopped before. So I don't see why not Morris wouldn't do it again. I mean, with the power that he brought up when he fought Ponce de Leon, I didn't think he was going to stop him. I thought he would outwork him and beat him. But, man, he impressed me. And being with Luis Garcia, it's showing me there's a lot of – the old saying, this is a cliche, hard work, dedication. We're seeing it with Adam Morris.
I agree. I agree 100%. Let me go real quick. We got 2 minutes left, Dave. I think we've highlighted that pretty well. This is courtesy of Scott Christ, I guess. Looking at his photo, I think it should be Christ because it's got a really nice kind of sepia tone thing going on in the background. Friday, this is Mike Tyson. I really wish we had more time to talk about this press conference. We ran out of time. The Turning Stone Resort Casino, Verona, New York, Mike Tyson Promotions, which was formerly had a different name. Just check out my article on maxboxing.com. Argenis Mendes versus Arash Usmani, super featherweights, 12 rounds for Mendes's IBF title. Claudio Morero versus Jesus Cuellar, featherweights, 12 rounds. Isaiah Thomas, light heavyweights, versus Glenn Johnson. I really want to see that fight. Juan Carlos Baiano versus Robert Vasquez, bantamweights, and jumping over Saturday, August 24th. Wish I could be there. Going to Burning Man, it was a tough choice, but not really. StubHub Center, Carson, California, Showtime. Abner Morris versus Johnny Gonzalez, featherweights, 12 rounds for Morris's WBC title. Victor Terrazas versus Leo Santa Cruz, super bantamweights, 12 rounds for Terrazas' WBC title. I expect Santa Cruz to win that one. Both of us are tabbing Abner Morris. Over in Germany, that same day, Gubrat Pulyev versus Tony Thompson, heavyweights. I'm going Thompson. And Arthur Abraham versus Wilbeforce Shihapo, best name of the weekend, Wilbeforce, spelled just like it sounds. Super middleweights, 12 rounds. Tyrone Zug versus the dreaded Tom Bob Anderson. And Jürgen Brammer versus Stefano Abatangelo, light heavyweights. And then over on Fox Sports, Gannigan Lopez versus Mateo Handig, strawweights, 12 rounds. That's in Reynoso, Mexico. Armando Santos versus Royo Gomez, flyweights, 12 rounds. And that is the Bad Left Hook boxing TV schedule.
And really quick, Scott's mom was just telling me right now, they have some new features on the Leave It in the Ring app. So make sure you download that to your Android or iPhone and stuff. I actually noticed it a couple of days ago because I was checking out the app and everything. And so if you haven't had the chance to download it, check it out. And if you have, retweet it to us and let us know that you have noticed the new features on the app. Anyways, everybody, have a great weekend. Be sure to tune in to Leave It in the Ring. We're not going to be back this Thursday. Gabriel Montoya, the dark cloud, is becoming sunny. So he's going on vacation and we're not going to do anything next Thursday. But we'll be back. Trust me, you're always back. You won't get rid of us. We're like herpes. We're with you all the time. Anyways, don't drink and drive or you will spill your beer. This is Leave It in the Ring. I'm your boy, Dave Duenas, and we have Mr. Gabriel Montoya. I wish I had that last name because it sounds like such a porn star type of name.
It really
Montoya,
is.
Montoya, you know?
It is actually. if you Google my name in porn, there's an Italian guy with my name. So with that,
wow.
I'm serious. Yeah, I changed my name to, because another guy had my name, to a guy who has an Italian porn career. Awesome. At least it's straight porn. Anyways,
and
Dave,
with
I,
that,
you,
we're going to leave it in the ring?
Yes.
All right, man. Peace.